Circe Olson Wessner, the director of the Museum of the American Military Family in Tejeras, New Mexico, and this is our podcast, Together We Serve. I'm speaking with Dennis Berwin, who attended Frankfort Schools from 1960 to 1978. His parents were working for the State Department, and he is going to tell us about his life as a brat. So, hi Dennis, how are you?
Hi, Circe. I'm doing well. Thank you. Coming to you from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Ah, is it warm there? It is freezing up here in New Mexico.
No, we have had a freeze overnight. It's warmed up to about 40 this morning.
Ah.
It's Frankfort December weather.
Oh, there you go. I was going to say, but with more sunshine, I hope.
A lot more sunshine. We have Carolina blue skies today.
Oh, awesome. Hey, I just had a question. You know, you're my first State Department person to interview. Do you consider yourself a State Department brat, or what do you call yourself?
You know, that's a really great question. I have never really called myself a brat, but because so many of my friends from growing up consider themselves and have really developed, there's even an organization called Overseas Brats, I've just accepted the sort of the moniker so I can fit in. But what's interesting about me is that I never knew anything else.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it was an absolutely normal existence. I literally was 2 months old when my folks flew from Washington, D.C. to Frankfort in a Boeing 707.
Mm-hmm.
My mom used to kid that she put me in an orange crate under the seat in front of her. So really, growing up in a super multicultural, multilingual household in Frankfort, Germany, I don't have a basis of comparison to living in the States until I moved here, you know, well after I was 18 years old. So I love the kind of community that has grown up around the kids that consider themselves overseas brats, but I didn't sort of, so a lot of my fellow State Department dependents went to the Frankfort International School.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to the Frankfort American High School. So there was a difference there. We lived both on the economy and on various housing areas in Frankfort. We started off in Plotten, which was the largest, I believe, housing area in Frankfort. And then we moved to the economy and lived there for 6 or 7 years, and then we moved to a housing area called Gibbs Housing Area, and after that we moved onto the economy again in near Bad Vilbel, but it was really close to the Bad Vilbel housing area. And then finally, before I left, my parents moved completely out to a town called Niederhöchstadt.
Uh-huh.
Which is a town that was a suburb of Frankfort and on the economy again. But always there was the big green military school bus that would come and pick me up no matter where. Well, in Bad Vilbel, I walked across the soccer field to the housing area. But
mm-hmm.
So it was like in the morning, I would get up and enter sort of the American dependent life, and then at the end of the day, I would ride my bus home and go back to my quasi-European/American life.
So, Dennis, I have to interrupt, but you said your dad worked for the State Department. I didn't know we had State Department in Frankfort. I thought they would all be in Bonn. What did your dad do, and also, what is the company?
Right. That's an excellent question. So I didn't know what my dad did as I was growing up, mainly, I think, probably for my protection than anything else, because we were a security risk. And when I say he worked for the company, he was an employee of the Central Intelligence Agency. And his job and his story, that's a whole nother story, the story that I have about how that came to be. But the bottom line is his function as best I know it, and he's passed away now, but I got as many stories out of him as I could before that happened. He was an interviewer. At the beginning, in the 50s and 60s especially, still, there was a huge amount of people fleeing the East, fleeing communism.
Uh-huh.
And one of his tasks was to interview these asylum requesters, if you will. And I'm mostly talking about intelligence asylum request people. Mm-hmm. In other words, people that came that said that they had intelligence to offer, and whether or not that intelligence was valuable or real was one of his tasks. He had the final say in many instances of whether or not an asylum request was to be granted. The reason was is he spoke all of the Cyrillic languages. He was from Slovakia originally, but he spoke Russian and Hungarian and Czech, as well as French, German, English, Italian, so he was uniquely positioned. He had been a pilot in the Czechoslovakian Air Force, but he was uniquely positioned to develop relationships with people and actually maintained it. Even after he retired in the mid-80s, there were still people over there, contacts for our government, that wouldn't speak to anyone but him. So the government would take him temporarily out of retirement and ship him over to wherever the meeting was supposed to take place well into the 90s.
Wow.
Because they wouldn't talk to anyone but him.
Wow. Wow. Well, listen, that is a different story, but wow, that's pretty cool. So listen, growing up, you didn't know what your dad did. Give me a typical day in the life of a State Department kid. What did you do? You went to the school, but yeah.
One of the things early on, and security was always a risk growing up over there. As you know, there were Bader-Meinhof gang, and there were attempts because he himself was originally an asylum seeker. He himself had some attempts by the communist secret police forces of trying to steal him back and take him back and send him off to Siberia somewhere. So security was something that was always that he always, in a very gentle way, would talk to us about. And he would say, don't always, when you come home, when you get off the bus or whatever, don't always take the same route home. And always be aware of your surroundings. And, of course, you asked me, before I forget, so his, everybody had APO addresses over there.
Right.
So his APO address was General Research Detachment.
Oh, geez. Wow.
which was a great nothing statement. I had a dependent ID card, and so I had PX privileges and things like that. My day would consist of waking up and my mom making us a very European style breakfast. She's from Austria, so she also was learning sort of the American culture as we were all growing up together, and the language for that matter. So some of the hysterical things when other kids got tuna fish salad sandwiches, my mom didn't really know how that worked, so she literally would take some oil-soaked tuna and throw it on some American sandwich bread with some lettuce, and then put it in a plastic bag, and then into my school lunch bag, paper bag, or a lunch box in the earlier years. And at lunchtime, everybody would be breaking their stuff out, and I would open mine up, and it would be a real mess. Tuna fish oil running through the bread. It was, she also would pack me oysters and sardines in the can, and some crackers, and so.
Yuck.
Let's just say my school lunches were very different than most of my peers.
Wow. Yeah. So did you make, did you have any problems making friends because of that? Or were the American...
You know, that's a really good question, because that really does speak to my personality. I've been blessed. I was born on a Sunday. It was a Palm Sunday, actually. And I've been blessed with what they have told me is a very sunny disposition all my life. Mm-hmm. So I really didn't. In the early years of grade school, let's say 1 through 3, in the summers, I would go and live with my grandmother in Austria. So early on in my life, I would forget the English or much of the English over the summer that I learned, because I only spoke German, all summer long. So I remember sometimes coming back in the fall to school and having to relearn speaking English. But my gregarious and outgoing personality seemed to always overcome anything like that. And one thing I wanted to touch on that seemed normal to me, and it was a phenomenon that my military dependent friends were always grumbling about having to move every 2 or 3 years and right. change schools and all that. And I was like the one constant, because my friends that I made would leave every 2 or 3 years, but I was still there. So in some ways, because I sort of knew all the ropes, I think when new people came, I was the one that would guide them or welcome them. And so, no, I'd never had any problems making friends or even keeping friends, even after they moved on. I mean, I was witness to a couple of times where somebody rotated away, was gone for 2 or 3 years, and then rotated back. And I was still there, and I'm like, welcome back.
You know, that is funny, because that was one of my questions, because I'm a Dodds kid, and I stayed put for 18 years, too. Our stories are kind of parallel. And I did. I'd have friends rotate back in, and that was a question which you just answered. Very awesome. So what else would you like us to know about you? My battery on my recorder is slowly dying, and so we may have a short interview, but what one or two best memories do you have of your growing up years?
Honestly, being able to share the culture that I was experiencing with kids. I tell the story of how I could be sitting in a classroom, and to my left was the daughter of a colonel from Alaska, and to the right is the son of a sergeant from Alabama. And the diversity, the natural diversity in our classrooms was amazing. And the blending of all of those cultures in those classrooms was always more that I, as I look back on it, than at the time. But because the current atmosphere in our country and around the world, as we talk about diversity and all those things, when we had it, we lived it, we experienced it, and I learned different accents, and people were, as I remember, very respectful towards one another and of one another.
Mm-hmm.
The coolest thing about Dodds schools was the control that the teachers had over their students in the classrooms. And it was because if you did something bad enough, the school wouldn't call like your parents in necessarily, but they would call your dad's boss.
Right, right.
Like, you know, the colonel in charge of the sergeant or whatever. And they would the threat was always there. If you mess up bad enough, you're going to get rotated back, and your parents' career might be over because of it. So I feel like there was a real carrot and stick, a valid carrot and stick sort of a system going on, because at the same time, and this was expressed explicitly in the handbooks, for example, I still have a Frankfurt American High School handbook from 1976, and on the front page it said, one of our missions is absolutely for our students to experience the dual culture in which they're living. And we had open campuses. You know, again, in high school, it was no big deal to go during lunch break to the Trinkhalle and to, to pick up your various and sundry items. I'm not going to, you know, later on I will say that we had an occasional beer even at lunchtime because it was so much of the culture in Germany.
Right.
But those are, it's those sort of macro things that I think would be my biggest things that I have really fond memories of.
So I grew up also, like I said, in Karlsruhe for, you know, all those years, and then I actually went to college in Munich for 2 years, and those exact things, you know, I it resonates with me, and it resonates with a lot of brats. So you stayed in Frankfurt. Did you go on to the University of Maryland in Germany, or did you come back to the States for college?
I did. I was fortunate enough to have been the senior class president of the class of 78 in Frankfurt.
Mm-hmm.
And then I graduated early. It was Friday, January 13th, 1978. Because I had been there and hadn't transferred and whatnot, I had all the credits I need to graduate. I graduated early in that second semester of what would have been my senior year. I was at the University of Maryland in Munich, the spring semester of 1978. And I turned 18 in April of that year. So I got there, I was 17 years old, and that was a real life changer and to the better, because Munich is just obviously such a fantastic city. And the campus on McGraw-Casern, I mean, when your meal plan includes beer, you know you've landed.
You know, I'm amazed at the parallels in our lives, because I graduated in 79 and went to UNM, University of Maryland in Munich, too.
That's cool.
Yeah, it is. And that
we
was,
just missed each other.
Yeah, that was an amazing experience. Well, so what is the best memory of Munich, since we're on the subject?
The Salvator Fest at the Paulaner Brewery. When you walk in there, it's in May, I think. I think it was in May. And they've got sawdust on the floor, and the dark beer is flowing, and the music is playing, and you're there with your college buddies. And then, again, always, the interaction with the locals.
Mm-hmm.
And having been very blessed in the fact that I spoke German fluently and could communicate, you know, real easily with the locals, striking up friendships over a beer is a human thing anyway. It's a world thing.
Mm-hmm.
But add into it when there's no communication glitches or whatever, it certainly makes it a lot easier. And making friendships, even sitting in the Salvator Fest after a couple of liters of beer, and you feel that flush in your cheeks, and you know your cheeks are red, and then in the evening you step out into the cold and walk to the Straßenbahn to get the ride home. Those kinds of memories are really probably at the top.
So I agree with you, and I remember so much from Munich fondly. That was one of the best educational experiences I got. So what did you major in college then, with your international background?
Yeah, I only went there one semester, and then actually I came back to the States.
Mm-hmm.
I joined the Navy. I did 3 years in the Navy. I actually took almost 10 years off before I went back to college. I ended up in Memphis, Tennessee, and after like I said, an 8 or 9 year hiatus, I really cranked through, and amazingly enough, all of the credits that I earned at University of Maryland transferred beautifully to the University of Memphis. So I started off college as a sort of a second semester freshman. Ended up with both a bachelor's and a master's degree in management. To your question, at Munich, I was just taking general, you know, first year college classes.
Right, right. So when you moved back to the States, having lived abroad all your life, did you have a huge culture shock? And you joined the Navy. That's not something I would have expected from a diplomat's kid. I would have expected something more on the, you know, maybe you're going into diplomacy. So did you have culture shock, and why did you decide to join the Navy?
Great, great questions. You're good at this, Pierce. Really, you are. You know, I really wanted to get into naval intelligence, actually, and I had obviously I had good SAT scores, and I had, you know, some college credits or whatever. But you know, part of it was the culture shock that I ended up in the Navy. Yes, to your main question, there was a supreme culture shock. So I had visited the United States during the course of my first 18 years, maybe 4 or 5 times, because we would go on quote home leave, even though we technically didn't have a home in the States. My dad chose Florida as our state of residence, mainly because there was no state income tax.
Exactly.
He's a smart man. But I do have great and fond memories of crossing the Atlantic on a ship. Mm-hmm. Because you remember back in those days, the DOD would pay for a cruise, if you will, to get back and forth across the pond. Mm-hmm. And I have memories of that. And then we would invariably like buy a cheap car in New York, mm-hmm. and then drive down to Florida. But that was for, you know, at max 2 months in the summer, 3 or 4 times. So my exposures at age 4, 6, 9. 9 and 13 or something, or 16, to the United States was just that. Mm-hmm. Driving the freeway from New York to Florida and back, and then living in a rental home in Florida for a month or two, and going to the beach every day, and going to Weeki Wachee Springs, and experiencing fast food. I do have one memory that stands out a lot, and that is the amount of trash that compared to Germany especially, but driving to Florida, you know, pulling off the freeway and stopping at a burger joint or something, and just the amount of trash that I saw, that was something that stuck with me for a lot. But when I finally did get here at 18, and I thought I knew everything, and who doesn't at 18?
Right.
But I didn't. I didn't know anything about how government works, how what services are available, you know, what to do. I mean, I got to California. I was supposed to meet a friend from Germany in California, and I get there and find out she's back in Germany for the summer. So I didn't have much to do. I went and looking for a job and those kinds of things, but pretty quickly ran out of money, and I ended up walking into the Navy recruiter, and I was interested in, like I said, naval intelligence and or biology, marine biology at the time. Mm-hmm. And my recruiter, who was a genius, said, "Oh, I have a job where you take water samples every day." And I said, "Well, that sounds pretty good." And off I went to boot camp in San Diego, and I thought, because I told him, the recruiter, this too, I said, "I'd really like to test for, you know, officer school or officer's candidate." Mm-hmm. I think OCS it was called.
Yeah, yeah.
And I tested for it, and my scores were very high, but this was Jimmy Carter's Navy, and the Navy was not in great shape, and they really needed boiler technicians. So I ended up being a boiler technician in the United States Navy, which meant I was the guy responsible for making steam down in the bottom of the ship to make the steam-powered ships go.
Wow.
And that was a real eye-opener for me, and I learned about culture and the military from an enlisted point of view. And it was also because it was different, because I had been exposed to Army and Air Force and, to a lesser extent, the Marine Corps. I think I probably went to the Navy because I was like, well, I don't know anything about this, and I've always had a very inquisitive mind.
Mm-hmm.
Needless to say, they did not accept my desire to transfer to Officer's Candidate School or even Naval Intelligence as an enlisted person, because I was needed as a boiler tech. So honestly, it was not a great experience for me at the end. I mean, I got out as quick as I could.
Right.
It was not for me. But that time period, I said, after that, before I went back to college, is when I really sort of started figuring out American culture. And learning about government and the services they offer, because that's the one thing I think is kind of a handicap, if you will, for kids like us that grew up over there. And it's very eerily parallel to young Americans getting out of the military now after having been at war for 10 years, you don't know, because the military does everything for you, and everything was provided for you, and you don't know how to, gosh, write a check, you know, or figure out where the unemployment office is, for example, if that's something you needed, because the military is so controlling, and I don't mean it necessarily in a negative way, but they literally do everything for you, and they spoon feed you everything, and everything is available in a microcosmic way very near you when you're growing up around an overseas military installation. So if anything, if I would ask, did I have any kind of a handicap, it was that my education did not prepare me for what it would be like to live a civilian life in the United States. But that's because I'm the exception. I think, you know, the DOD schools, I mean, most kids spent most of their lives growing up in the States and would only come overseas for a couple, 2-3 year tour or something like that.
Right.
So they didn't, I don't think it was in their DNA to figure out exceptions like me, like how do we teach these people to be independent Americans, because they supposedly already are.
Right. Well, and you had it a little different, because you actually straddled both cultures more so than I did. Both of my parents were American living overseas, but you had parents that were Europeans, and you were trying to find your way into the U.S. Culture, and your parents were too. So I think, you know, you're definitely what they call that third culture kid, and it might have been even more so of a handicap for you.
Right, I agree. Because I could get around in Germany. I mean, and actually many of my peers who had similar experiences to me and spent as much time over there, they've stayed. I still have an old girlfriend, Laura Lurch. Hey, Laura, hope you're listening. She works at Deutsche Bank. And she just stayed.
Yeah.
You know, many of them just stayed because that was the culture they were familiar with. But, boy, I was dying to get to the States. I knew I was an American, born in America. By the way, both my parents had been naturalized as well by the time of my birth. I just want to throw that out there. And, of course, having been born in D.C., I was a natural-born American citizen. But I wanted to get to this country because, again, and this has to go back to my dad's story, when he fled communism, he had the opportunity and the wherewithal and the skills and the knowledge to have chosen to go anywhere. He could have gone to Switzerland and lived a perfectly good life, I'm sure, in Switzerland or anywhere else. But he chose the United States. He made his way to Vienna. Was divided like Berlin at the time into sectors, and he made his way to the American sector of Vienna, and he chose to work for what was then the OSS, and then later became the Central Intelligence Agency. You know, he chose that, and I felt like, and it's still something that drives me today, like I have a debt to this country I can never repay, because he gave up everything, his family, his name, and everything for an ideal. And the ideal that he chose to model his life and his family into was the United States of America. I can never honor that enough. And that's another thing that probably drove me into considering the military service, because I wanted some way to give back. Even though at the time I don't think I was conscious of it. And it's why I'm involved in politics and government today. Because I believe, and now it's for my kids. I'm blessed to have 5 children, 2 grandkids, and I want to make this country even better for them.
You know, I think we're gonna end it right there. I was gonna ask more questions, but I think you summed it up perfectly in your last statement. So I'm gonna sign off. And I'm going to thank you very much for having spoken to us on our podcast, Together We Serve. Once again, this is Circe Olson Wessner, and I was speaking to Dennis Berwin, Frankfurt High School graduate, University of Maryland, Munich alumni and Navy veteran. And I wanted to thank you, Dennis, for having spoken to us on our podcast, Together We Serve. Thanks.
You are welcome.